dbkmediaservices.com. Listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SBCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, Derek Webb, and Bruce Knox.
Hello to all you SVC fans listening, and this is Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, show number 211, our seventh season, all of which have been brought to you by Triple Crown Family Fun Center. They're located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe, right off of Bridge Street, just behind the Hampton Inn. Open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. You can find out all kinds of good details about them on the web at www.TripleCrownFamilyFunCenter.com. Give them a call, 740-773-7529. I want to say hello to the two brains behind the SVC Sports Talk. First, of course, the good doctor, Mr. D.R. Webb from the Chillicothe Gazette. How are we this evening, Derek?
Good, Bruce. Right in the middle of, we're about to start tournament season for the girls. We get the tournament seeding out of the way for the boys, and it's my favorite type of year, so.
Yep.
Time of year, I guess. So I'm getting ready. We're ramping up.
Yeah, I think you're probably reaching the peak of excitement right about now, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so is Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com. Shane, you're probably at a fevered pitch right now, aren't you?
Oh, it is. It's an exciting time of year. Everything he just said about tournament basketball, and then it's I've always said, really, since we started doing this way back when, that anytime we name our teams, our all-league teams, which we're going to do for the girls here tonight, those are some of my favorite shows, just because, again, how hard we work at it and how many games we watch and how much effort we really try to put into it to take it serious.
Well, it's a labor of love, I think. I think you guys kind of enjoy it. So, guys, we're going to get into all that you just mentioned, but first we want to kind of look back just a little bit. A couple nights ago, the highlight of the week probably has to be the Unioto Southeastern girls game, in which the Lady Shermans defeated Southeastern 49-46, bringing to a halt Southeastern's SVC win streak at 40. So what were your overall impressions and feelings about that game? Derek, we'll go to you first.
Well, I mean, first of all, just a heck of a game. Mm. We kind of, it lived up, I guess these matchups, you know, each week or yearly. Obviously, we know Southeastern and Unioto were going to be good coming into the year. So I think we had those two dates circled on our calendars, mm-hmm. The entire year. A lot of times that happens, and, it's like the first game where it was, a 22 blowout or a 22-point blowout. So this one lived up to its billing. Yeah. The fans that paid $5, they definitely got their money's worth on Thursday night. Let's put it that way.
Shane, your thoughts?
Well, he makes a great point. I mean, you anticipated the first matchup just the same, and, mm-hmm. and Southeastern kind of slapped them in the mouth and just beat them in every aspect possible. And the thing that jumps out to me when I think of Thursday night, I think of the championship atmosphere. Obviously, the seating arrangement and the different things in that gym area, Unioto's nutty anyway. And so you throw in a big game and you throw in some of the atmosphere, and it was wild. I tweeted out off of some of Derek's good updates that he was given. I was just trying to give a different perspective, maybe quarter to quarter. And I talked a little bit early about the officials, how they're going to let them play, which is kind of is to say they're going to let them kill each other. Offense was hard to play, and you'd think I would favor Southeastern on one side, the physicality. Plus, they're not very deep, so the last thing they want to do is get in foul trouble. Mm-hmm. On the other side, you think, well, maybe that favors Unioto because Unioto played more physical this time around. It made it easier to guard Southeastern. So, I thought that was the thing that jumped out at me, Derek, was how much harder Unioto played the first time. I was critical of Josie Fisher a little bit in that first matchup. I thought she was outstanding with her effort the other night. I think she had 11 rebounds, really competed hard. They turned Skeens into a volume shooter. And then, like I said, just competed on the glass and got it deep into the game. And at the end of the night, they were able to make the one extra play, or in this case, the one extra shot. Sigmund really thrilled us there with a possible sport zony, maybe down the line, Bruce. You know, no, I just some uncharacteristic mistakes of a experienced team from Southeastern. I think of one being a lane violation. Seemed to be a little miscommunication from the bench on the matchup they wanted to get into. Probably cost them a point with an 80% free throw shooter at the line. But you know, again, it's hard to fault kids when they're out there playing hard and playing as hard as those teams played. And like I said, it really came down to the under a minute there. Uniota made the one extra shot and. You know, congratulations to them, and really, it was just a really fun thing to be a part of and watch.
Well, congratulations to the Lady Shermans and Jeff Miller. Watching it through Twitter, through your guys' eyes, it must have been a heck of a game. And I saw your interview with Jeff after the game, and he talked as if it was everything that you guys described it as. So. Congratulations to them, and Southeastern's win streak will start anew. So,
and Derek, didn't you think it kind of went full circle? Because, you know, in the preseason, you kind of felt like, man, Uniota on paper looks like they've got enough to get Southeastern this year. And then Southeastern reminded us that, hey, this is our title to lose, and they kind of, you know, really beat them bad the first time. Then at the end, it kind of came full circle back to where it kind of ended the way maybe it should have at 13-1 with two great teams sharing it.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, I think you say full circle. Well, I think we're starting it. Well, one, I guess it did come full circle this year, but I think we start a new circle now. Because of what Jeff had said in the postgame interview. You know, I mean, let's face it. I mean, you know, Uniota has a very talented roster, and you know, all but three kids are coming back next year. Four of the returning five. I mean, they've got number six and number seven off the bench. They're going to be back. I mean. Other than Atkins, so I guess number seven and eight. But you know, you look at where they're at as a program, and then you look at what Southeastern loses. You know, I mean, we might have just maybe saw the start of another winning streak that could potentially reach, 40 as well.
Fair point. Yeah.
All right, Shane. Let's go to our Learn the Website segment, brought to us by Crown Hill Golf Club.
Yeah, Crown Hill Golf Club, 740-986-4653. Had a chance to catch up with them a little bit this week. They're real excited about some of the things on their website and some different things that they're going to be doing. Make sure you check them out. I've said this all along, guys. I really think the best thing for an SVC fan to do down this way is to get a hold of them by phone, 740-986-4653. Let them know that SVC Sports Talks sent you in. And just kind of let them know about, hey, I think I'd like to come up here, come up and play this many times or this type of package or whatever. I think they'd really hook you up. So, when we learned the website this week, Bruce, I wanted to take a look at our junior varsity. Mm-hmm. Obviously, as we talk a lot about our varsity champions, we've had some junior varsity JV winners. Piketon boys get a nice win the other night. And, you know, on the boys side there, Zane Trace and Union and West Falls had some nice teams. Obviously, we have some young teams in our league when you consider half the league doesn't even play freshman basketball. You could argue on one side that a lot of the JV games I've seen have been very competitive for 2.5-3 quarters. And the Piketons, the Zane Trace Uniotas of the world, maybe just have a little bit more depth where a lot of teams just simply can't finish a third or fourth quarter because they just, you know, don't have the numbers. And when I say don't have the numbers, I've even seen some JV teams end with four a couple times this year. So, you know, that's certainly a fair point, but I think there's something to be said about the consistency of the Piketon program. And the job that they do there with their JV kids, a lot of depth. They run a lot of athletes at you. They don't really have that quote-unquote go-to star, but they have a bunch of kids that can play, and they play the game the right way, and that's really exciting. And then on the Uniota girls, on the girls' side, they win the league again going away. And this brings me to a fan question that had come to me, Derek, kind of a follow-up to your article. They had seen where I had tweeted out on Friday night some of the boys' scores and updates showing Piketon as the champion, and then you had put the piece in the paper about the JV girls. And there's a question that had come, and before I say anything, I wanted to ask you this question just to give you a chance to, I don't want to say defend your article or just, you know, defend our stance of doing this or whatever, but it's just, it's an interesting side note. And I think it brings a great discussion. The question was this: do you think we are in a rush giving JV basketball too much print or attention? What would you say to that when you think back to what you were able to accomplish with that article and some of the kids you're highlighting and, you know, obviously the consistency of what they've done?
You know, I mean, I guess even if I had to defend my article, it wouldn't be the first time I had to defend one. So I'm well versed in that. Here's you know, my thinking on it. The junior varsity kids at any level, you know, in any sport, they're still local kids. They work just as hard as the varsity kids. They work just as hard, you know, as your star players of today. You know, maybe they're not fully developed as a basketball player, as a soccer player, whatever it may be. But they're still local, and they're still, you know, I guess I kind of call them one of our kids, if you would. So to me, I don't see anything at all wrong with printing an article, you know, highlighting their accomplishments. They don't get a lot of print. I think that was the first junior varsity article that I've written. I mean, maybe ever. I know that there's a couple times where I'll do, you know, like JV circuit in a column and kind of talk about kids that will probably develop to be, you know, the next Tanner Perdue or the next Elijah McCloskey or whatever it may be. But I mean, I think in the grand, you know, scheme of things, I don't think it was really, I don't think for me it was a rush to put their names in the paper. I didn't think I took it that way. I just took it as, hey, these, you know, these kids put in the work, they put in the time, and, you know, they deserve some credit too. And here's the thing that, you know, maybe stands out above the, you know, all else. A lot of kids these days think, well, I got to play on the JV team. I'm not going to do that. It's JV. You know, I mean, a lot of kids might have that mindset of, well, I'm too good to play JV. I don't want to be on. If I'm not going to play varsity, I don't want to be on a team. When I totally disagree with that stance, because when you look at a JV team, when you look at a program, the JV team and the development of those players at that level is essential to your success at a varsity level. So, I mean, for these kids to come in each day, each, you know, day in, day out, watch the varsity play, know that they're not probably going to get in the game that night, but also know I got to be at the gym tomorrow to get better so I can get to that level. I mean, I think that says a lot about their character. So, I mean, I think they deserve everything they get in print, even though if it's not much, to be honest. And, you know, I don't think in any length that, you know, there was a rush to put them in.
Well, I think that's an outstanding article. I think, Bruce, it was an outstanding article, and I think that's an outstanding answer to that particular comment. Because, Bruce, here's my thing on it. I think this was a very old-fashioned statement of how many of us might have felt, say, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
In today's time, I thought the article was just fine. I think we even tried to put some scores. Now, do we do the same exact thing for the JV as we do the varsity? No, of course not, mm-hmm. Nor should we. We even put some junior high scores on there so you can follow. We'll put a kid's last name in there. Hey, he scored this or whatever. She scored this. I guess I look at it. I thought the last part of his answer was spot on. In a time where half of our league doesn't have a freshman boys team, and in a time where numbers are falling drastically in the game of basketball and really a lot of sports, what better way to highlight the JV level than to say, hey, look, this is what you do in a good program. You come up and you play JV. You wait your turn. You kind of work hard to build up. You know, what I would tell parents that have a problem with us putting JV scores on the website, and by the way, learn the website, you go to the top of the varsity scoreboard, and that's where you'll find the link to go to the freshman JV or the junior high, for that matter. You'll see those links there. So, again, the learn the website segment.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we live in a time where we're playing games third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade. You know, we have Parents Day for sixth graders. Like, it's like their senior night from elementary school. The other night I was at a junior high game, and I want to announce the eighth graders. They're playing in their final junior high home game. I mean, come on. I mean, really? I mean, and then, you know, you get to these senior nights and more pet peeves of mine about giving flowers to seniors from the other team and all. But again, I'm getting off track here. So my point is we have things for kids as low as the third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade now. It certainly doesn't hurt us to honor a JV level, a level that is really, really needed In terms of helping keep our league strong. So I agree with you, Derek. Maybe I would have thought more of that question 15, 20 years ago, but in the modern day time, I think you're spot on. And anytime you're honoring kids, I don't see what the negative is.
That I was going to say, Shane, did anybody really say that there was a negative, or was there just the implication of this person that wrote in?
Well, this was actually a fan question. Like, okay. This is a conversation I had, and I kind of had taken it as, you know, hey, let's keep the print to the varsity or whatever.
Why?
Yeah, so maybe so. I don't know. I think it's a very old school approach of, you know, make them wait their turn or whatever. Well, we kind of, that ship sailed about 10 years ago when we changed everything.
Yeah. The internet helped out too, didn't it? Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, that was interesting. I found that interesting. I had not known that anyone would object to that, but I learned something every day. We're heading out to a look at the inbox brought to you by CNK Athletic Equipment. They are your source for local SVC apparel, fitness gear, sports accessories, headwear, and sports equipment. And they've launched into custom screen printing, custom embroidery, and also corporate wear. So they're more of a full-service sporting goods store now. And they are currently located at 106 West Main Street in Circleville, where you can call them at 740-477-9828. Now, if you are like me and follow them on Facebook, you may have noticed that as of Friday, they announced their moving sale. And that's going to take place on Saturday, February the 17th from 10 to 4. They're marking all their inventory down 50 to 70%, but that excludes equipment. And they did say under a post that they are moving to Chillicothe. We'll have more information on that upcoming in another episode. But sounds like a good time if you're in, you know, the specials like that, down 50 to 70%, you might want to make the trip or at least give them a call. Again, 740-477-9828. They are bringing you a look at the inbox. And by far, guys, in our look at the inbox, by far the biggest topic this week is going to be our all SVC selections. So I'm not going to wander around too much. We're going to get straight into it. And on this, I'm going to kind of break it down, similar to what we did in football, I think, where I'm going to give you a chance to kind of give me an overview, and then we'll move on to coach of the year, then player of the year, and the rest of the first team, second team, and then third team. And then when we do the third team, if you've got some honorable mention kids on your radar, when you're finishing your list, you might want to bring those up too. So Derek, first, without mentioning any names, just give me your overall thoughts in the process this year.
Well, I mean, Shane, I don't know about you, but I've got about, I'd say if we're putting five on each, you know, I've got about 20, 21 names here that, you know, could really go anywhere, you know, you'd want to kind of fill them in. I don't know. I'm kind of on the first team. To me, there was a bar, and it was just like, okay, after that, there's a little bit of a drop off in terms of scoring, in terms of statistics. But once you get to second, third team, I mean, for me, it was a crapshoot. I'm sitting here like, well, where? I mean, you put this kid here. Well, this kid could take her place on that team. Well, this maybe this kid, you know, deserves to be here. So, my honorable mention list. I mean, you could honestly argue every one of the players on the honorable mention list, you know, to be on second or third team.
All right, Shane, your thoughts?
Yeah, I could see without, again, Derek and I have no idea of one another's list when we do this. We talk, as Bruce knows, we talk nothing here in the studio before we go on in terms of our teams. We try to do it straight from the top of our own opinion versus Derek's opinion. So for me, an overview is it was a really tough process this year. I think what happened to me, Derek, and we're probably similar situations. I had maybe a little personal bias with guard play versus post play.
Well, that's a surprise.
As I always do.
Yes.
I thought the Lexi Woods injury was really, really big here in terms of what I envision the standings to be versus the reality. Because what I do, guys, a lot of times is I go through and I make my teams, and then I compare it back to a stat sheet, and it usually will fall in the line okay. And then I go back to the standings, and usually it'll fall in, you know, somewhat okay. This year, that was a little bit lopsided, and it made me start to second guess myself a little bit. And I think a lot of it had to do with where, you know, I envisioned the standings, say, 2-3 weeks ago when I was doing this, compared to the reality of what the standings say. So it really made it tough. You know, Uniota's depth is insane. That makes it tough. But you know, I always say this, Bruce, you'll remember me saying this all the way back 5, 6, 7 years ago. We'll usually always agree on 11, 12 names. And then you'll get down to those last 2 or 3 spots, and you could argue some years 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And there's only 15 spots. So when I say that coaches or we on here or whatever usually get it right, that's kind of what I mean by that. And I think at the end of the day, that'll probably be the case here. I think 10, 11, 12 names will probably agree on more times than not. And then I think it could really turn into some fun debate.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, we name a lot of kids, and that's – I don't know that our honors really matter. If they really do to people, that's very flattering to SVC Sports Talk. But, you know, we're not going to give a dinner or a plaque or anything like they do in the real league standings. That's the one you really need to pay attention to. But
we can start.
Yeah. You can spring for dinner for everybody.
Right.
We'll be there.
Yeah.
Just name the place and time. Well, let's get right into it, guys. After that overview, we'll start with the Coach of the Year. And for this, we go to Derek first.
Well, Shane, you know, for me, look, we both know that traditionally, obviously, Coach of the Year go to, you know, who won the league, right? Like, I mean, most years, the Coach of the Year goes to who won the league. For me, I'm going a different route this year. First of all, Mike Adams and Jeff Miller are both very deserving recipients of that award. But I'm going to Tiffany Carroll at Huntington. You know, first year, they're, I believe, 15-7. You know, you're not really sure the dynamic of what, you know, you had with Tiffany Carroll at Huntington, you know, to begin the year. Because here's the thing, they lost Ricky McGill, who, you know, pretty much did everything. They ran their offense last year. I mean, she was kind of the motor that kept it running. So, I mean, I think Tiffany came into that job with some questions. And, you know, then she goes 15-7, and Braden Collins does what she does. You know, Kelsey McDonald scores, rebounds, assists. I mean, but I think she got the team, and this is why I guess discount the 15 wins, discount Braden Collins' high level of play all season long. To me, the main reason that Tiffany Carroll is the Coach of the Year is because of the way Huntington plays. And if you don't know what I'm saying, if you haven't watched Huntington, they're scrappy, they hustle. If there's a ball on the floor, you're going to see at least 3 bodies, you know, kind of bang down there. You know, they're going to be on the floor. So I just like the way she has her team playing. I like the mojo of the team right now. I think she's, you know, they got some momentum going into a tournament run. And, you know, overall, if you look at her body of work, I mean, I don't see how you argue against it.
All right. Shane, your Coach of the Year.
Well, guys, anytime we do this, being a coach myself, I always ask for a little bit of time here just to highlight our coaches. Just, I mean, as colleagues of mine, I just think it's important to do this. I wanted to start, you know, the situation that Coach Daly's in there at Zane Trace. I think it's incredible what she's doing for that program. I think the school has a responsibility. I think everybody has to share an accountability that's allowed it to get to this spot. And I think, you know, you see an example at Huntington there about 6-7 years ago of they went through this and their school really committed to a hire. And you know, now you look and where that went the next 3-4 years and now where it's been the last 3 or 4 years, I think St. Trace can do the same thing immediately. If they'll really get behind as a community, and there's a lot of good basketball players for Zane Trace in grades 9 through 12, unfortunately, and they're not at Zane Trace. You know, so they got to figure out a way to keep their own at home. And that starts with a community-wide, a school-wide responsibility. Coach Scott there at Adena, again, the improvement they continue to make every year is really impressive. I love what they have in their eighth and ninth grade together right now. I'm not able to really maybe talk about the actual problem because I don't have the knowledge to do so. But I do know whatever the reason is, they've got a lot of kids that are very, very talented that are not playing. And so they're going to have to figure out a way to maybe share the athletes or to get more athletes involved. Maybe that'll be a story for on down the line. You know, Coach Blue there at Westfall, they were 4-3, I believe, Derek, in the second half. Once their balance increased, they got better. You mentioned Coach Carroll, outstanding job there at Huntington. I had written an article at the beginning of the year that if Huntington hired a teacher and committed to someone long-term, that they were in a position where they could win and win big. And I think what you're seeing this year is now, what, 3 years in a row? I think you'll see it for another 3-4 years, no doubt about it, moving forward. Coach Norman at Paint Valley, what a nightmare season she walked into. You know, losing Woods the way she did. And then we mentioned Jeff Miller and Mike Adams. Anytime you win a league, you're up for this award. Coach Adams won, what, 40 in a row. But, you know, Derek, you and I are kind of on the same path. We're just going a different direction. My coach here is going to be Brett Carino. I think Brett does an amazing job. I've coached against Brett off and on for about 20 years now, and it just amazes me the way he prepares his kids. If you'd have told me this basketball team was going to get to 7-7 in the league and 12-9 overall, I don't think I'd have been able to see it. You know, for them to go to Paint Valley and win, Lexi Woods injury or not, then they go to Huntington and win. Obviously, they dropped one to Westfall there the other night, but again, that's the credit to Westfall there in the second half of the season. But you know, the overall body of work, when I look at where I had a lot of these teams, the 12-9, 7-7 mark for Piketon, very, very, very impressive. And Coach Carino has been known, Bruce, to do it a lot with height over the years. Mm-hmm. All that height that's been there for a decade now was gone, and he did it with a different type of team this year. And I think that's just, again, a credit to his coaching and how hard he gets his kids to play.
All right. We'll move along to player of the year and then the rest of your first team, and we're going to switch things up, and we're going to let Shane go first on this.
Yeah, sounds good. Let's start there with the player of the year. I don't think this is going to blow anybody away. With Ella Skeens. I mean, what a terrific talent, Bruce. What an absolute pleasure it has been to watch her go about this. You know, maybe her freshman year, there was a little bit of debate, her as a freshman, Alexis Overly as a senior, maybe a little bit there when they shared. But really, from day one of her sophomore year, there's been really no debate in terms of who the best player in the league's been. And the numbers that she's putting up should pass Southeastern school record here in the sectional, and then should pass Crystal Tharp in the district level if all goes as planned. Just a special, special player. You know, people ask me all the time, where does she rank all time? Is she the best of all time? You know, that's obviously a very, very difficult thing to say. I'm 40 years old. I can't sit here and pretend like I've watched kids play back and, you know, or people play back in the 80s and so forth. But in the 25 years or so that I've been knowledgeable enough to watch it and know what's going on, I mean, I think she's got a little bit of all the greats. You know, she may not quite be the shooter of an Aubrey Evelyn, but she's certainly a great shooter. She may not be quite as efficient as Crystal Tharp, but she certainly's had her nights where she can do a lot of things on with little opportunity in terms of minutes played, especially. You know, I describe her a little bit, maybe an athlete of a Natalie Hill with a skill set of a Lori McClellan. So a lot of those names I'm throwing out there are really high regard. And then, you know, I think instead of worrying about who the best of all time is, or just take time to appreciate how special of opportunity it's been to watch this young lady go through her career. And she's obviously not done yet. And, you know, we wish her the best moving forward. In the two hole here, with the way she's been able to do it all year long, Derek, I'm going to go Braden Collins. You know, Braden goes over 1,000 points in less than 50 career games. That tells you right there that she can score. But what's crazy about it is she might be more dynamic and impact a game even more on the other end with the way, you know, with the way she can defend and the way she gets active and the way she gets deflections and the way she takes defense and creates her offense off of that. You know, I had a chance to coach Braden for a couple years. What an incredible young lady, works so hard. What I respect the most about her is that kid that you see playing that hard 32 minutes a night, that's exactly the way she practices. I mean, this kid brings it every single night and plays really, really hard. And, can't say enough about her. Definitely put her in that two hole there. In the third spot, even though she missed quite a bit of time, It's a no-brainer to keep Lexi Woods on the team. Anyone who questions the time she missed costing her all league is that's kind of borderline stupid. you know, it's you're talking about the all-time leading scorer there at Payne Valley. At one point early in the year, Derek, especially against some of the competition she was playing against, she was flirting with a chance to be top one or two in the league in about five categories. Obviously she's been slowed by injury. Her averages, where she played sparingly in three or four games, you know, when the injury happened, and then since the injury, trying to build her up to tournament, it's kind of made the averages go down a little bit. And I say go down to like 21 a game, you know, points. But, you know, yeah, just a phenomenal kid, phenomenal work ethic to accomplish what she has. And then, you know, so I think those three are no-brainers. You know, when I get to the four spot, Derek, here's the Uniota situation starting. Like, how in the world do you sort this group out? When I started putting down, you and I must be similar, because I had about 19 to 21 names down on my overall list. And I started laughing. I'm like, well, goodness, I'm even into like Uniota's bench. You know, Uniota might have like six of the top 17, 18 kids here. So, like, I think when you use the eye test and you watch kids play, it's one thing. But I still think in the all league, there's something to be said for production. And I think that's where I go Josie Fisher here. I think Josie's a kid that is very efficient. She finishes around the rim, she plays hard. Uniota uses a lot of four guard lineups, which a lot of times leaves her to clean up the glass. And, you know, like I commented in the opening there, Bruce, boy, did she do that the other night. She was really, really big going to battle there with Collins and Heiss inside. And I thought she did that. So, I understand a lot of people say, you know, she plays with great guard play. She gets a lot of easy looks, things like that. That's fair. But at the end of the day, I see a lot of kids get a lot of easy looks and they can't make the shots. You know what I mean? She finishes and she does it efficiently. And I think that makes her in that fourth spot. And then the fifth spot, I know Southeastern probably has a beef for that spot. Uniota could probably throw another couple names in the mix, but I still think we would be overlooking Grace Lytle if we didn't go there. And that's just my opinion. I think, like I said, this Piketon team, I thought overachieved a little bit. And as good as I think Avery Reuter is, and I'll talk about her on down my list later, I don't think it's in Avery Reuter's makeup to pick up the scoring slack and start scoring 15, 16, 17 points a night. Grace Lytle showed me something early in the year when she started posting some 20-point nights and some 23 and 25-point nights and so forth. I just think, to me, when I look at where they finished and I look at the way she produced on the offensive end, it's close and it's debatable, but I would certainly put Lytle there. So Bruce, I go Skeens, the obvious player of the year, Collins and Woods in the 2-3 spot without debate. Okay. Fisher in the 4-hole, Lytle in the 5th spot.
All right. Thank you, Shane. Mr. Webb, you're up.
Got nothing to say, Bruce. I mean, it's tick for tack here.
Really?
I mean, I've got the exact same list in the exact same order.
Amazing.
So, I think that's the first time that's ever happened on an all-league list for a first team. Am I right, Shane?
Well, it is. And you know, Derek, obviously feel free to talk about these kids a little bit. But the one thing I would ask you is, did you struggle in some of the aspects of the Uniota? We don't have to talk about any other kids because I know we will later. But did you struggle a little bit with the Uniota rankings and a little bit with that fifth spot?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, when you were going through your list and you're saying, okay, well, I was thinking this way. Well, I was literally thinking the exact same things. You know, I got from Ella, Braden, Lexi. You know, that was kind of top three, okay, bar none. Then you go down and you say, okay, well, Uniota won the league. You don't even have, after your top three, you don't even have a kid from one of the teams that won the league on here. Who do you pick? I struggled with their guards, you know, or Fisher. I think you made a good point when you said, you know, production. You know, Josie's in double-figure scoring. She rebounds, you know, the best rebounder on the team, one of the best rebounders in the conference. She does it on a nightly basis. She's done it really for the last 2 years, if you look at it. So I don't really think there's not much argument that could be why not Josie Fisher. So I put that there. And then Grace Lytle, I mean, she, you know, again, first of all, you're exactly right when you talk about Piken and Brett Carino and the great job he's done there. But he doesn't do that job without Grace Lytle. I mean, you take Grace Lytle off of Piken's team, right. I don't think they win 12 games. So yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, tick for tack, you know, we're so far, we're on the same page.
Well, you just made a point that I never thought about, Derek, about Josie Fisher, you know, last year as well. She kind of fell victim a little bit to a numbers crunch last year. So what she do? She turns right around and has basically the same year, probably a little bit better this year on a good team. So that's well said. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to stick with Derek for the second team, and we'll see if this works out the same way.
I'd say the second, third team is going
to be different. I agree.
At least it had my head spinning all week.
Yeah.
And this is where it gets hairy. You're right. I mean, this is where you start to think, okay, well, wait a minute. You know, this kid could easily be subbed for this kid. You know, I'm not going to say my second team in like a certain order.
Okay.
Because I really don't know. I don't really think there is a certain
order.
See,
if I said that, Bruce would be all over, man. But you're fine. Well, you did. I'm just throwing that in there just for discussion. Bruce wouldn't have that.
You're the executive producer. You've been doing this a long time. So, I mean, he's a new kid, remember? So,
right.
We're going to give him a little bit. I think last year this time, well, he was still with us, I think, last year this time.
I was still here. Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm coming up on my one-year anniversary, right?
Yeah, there's a reason Bruce sits in the chair that he does in the studio. So if he says it's all right, then go ahead. I mean,
okay. I'm gonna take your advice. I'm going to go with it. You know, for me, we'll start out with we talk about Southeastern Union. They both won the league, right? So for me, we'll start with Southeastern, McKinley Mitten. She was kind of that perfect running mate to Ella, if you would. She can really knock down the three ball. But what I like about her, Shane, is that she hustles. She performs well off the glass certain nights. I mean, she brings a little bit of everything other than just, you know, scoring. She can score. But if you look at the other parts of her game, you know, she's a lot of times it's overlooked because of how well Ella always plays. But, you know, I think if you take Ella off that team, you know, say Ella, God forbid, she has an injury like Lexi would. I think McKinley becomes your main scorer. So I've got her there. Then you go to Uniota. I've got Cree Stulley, who really came on in the second half of the season. She constantly, if you take Fisher out of the lineup, Cree is the best rebounder on that team. She scored, I think it was 8 or 9 points a game. And if you really look at the entire Uniota roster, I mean, their top maybe 4 or 5 scorers are at 6 to 9 points a game. So that's why it's so tough to pick two from Uniota. But I look at Cree, I look at you know, just her production all season long. She's just going to continue to get better as a sophomore. I think she's really got a shot to be on a first team next year. I'll stay with Uniota, and again, not no certain order, but I have to pick Summer Sigmund. She's the senior leader. During that second half of the year and during this little, 7-0 second half run in conference play, Jeff Miller, I can't tell you how many times in postgame interviews he came up to me and he said, senior leadership, you know, we need it tonight, we got it. Mm-hmm. And each time that was Summer Sigmund and Carly Adkins, you know, for the most part. But Summer, you know, if you look at, if you watch them play, you mentioned eye tests earlier, Summer is the engine. You know, if she plays well, Uniota plays well. If Summer plays well, Uniota usually wins by double digits. So you had to put her there. She played well against Vinton County. She played well against Southeastern. She played well against Huntington. So those are all big games. And I just felt like Summer stepped up in big games, which is why she got the nod over a couple of her teammates on second team for me. Then I go to Avery Reuter. You mentioned Avery earlier. You know, the second team, the first and second team, Shane, you like point guards. I don't think if I'm starting an SVC team now, I don't think I take another point guard. I think I take Avery Reuter. She's so quick. She's so I liked it. She plays with a chip on her shoulder, and she's like she's a mighty mouse, if you would. I mean, she doesn't have a lot of size, but she constantly is up in her opponent's face. I mean, she plays good defense. She's up near the top of the league in steals. She knows how to run Brett Carino's offense. She's done that for 4 years now. And it was pointed out to me this past week, by the way, Shane, that Avery, if she stays healthy, will also break the Piketon's all-time games played record. So she's durable. You know, she's just been in that system. She deserves that nod, and not just because she's been in the system for 4 years, but she deserves a nod because she's a heck of a point guard. Then I go with number, I guess, 10, if you would, if you're counting at home. I got to go with West Falls' Emily Robinson. I know maybe you could pop a Huntington kid on here, maybe even a Paint Valley kid, but just you mentioned they won 4 games in the second half, and Emily Robinson in each of those games was in had 20 or more points. She's West Falls' leading scorer, a senior there. I mean, they're going to lose a lot with Emily Robinson. I think West Falls is going to be good next year, or decent, but they lose a lot with Emily Robinson. They lose a leader. They lose a shooter. So, I mean, I think, like I said, when you hear my third team, you can say, well, that kid could have been on that second team over maybe an Emily Robinson or maybe one of the two Unyoda kids you put on there. I don't know, though. I mean, it gets hairy at this point. But, I mean, that's my second team. Shane, I'll bet my house that yours isn't the same.
Well, I tell you, it's not the same, and it's not going to seem as drastic right now, but what's crazy is it's going to really set up for some interesting discussion here in about 15 or 20 minutes. So my second team, yes, they are.
You're going to get the post-game or the post-show meal, whereas Derek will not.
I see.
We're going to dock his pay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I too have Southeastern here, and I understand I'm usually the one that goes to the guard, but I guess I'm the one going to the post here, Derek. I guess where I disagree, we agree on team, disagree on player. I go Rachel Collins. You know, Rachel's a top 10, 11 scorer in the league, top 10 rebounder, second in blocks, and I just think it's a team that has been built this year so much on the defensive end. And on her rebounding and the way she does it so efficiently and so forth. I just feel like she's a kid not quite capable, even at 14-0 after the game the other night, even at 14-0, I don't think she could have overtaken Lytle for my fifth spot. But I think I hate to go too much lower than the sixth spot here without getting Rachel Collins in there. I think what she's done during the 40-game win streak in her career, as well as the 13-1 season this year, is really something special. I, too, have Unyoda in the next two spots. We agree on Cree Stallie. I think Cree Stallie's a special, special talent. I still think there's a whole nother level she can go to over the next couple years. I think she's a really special talent in terms of the way she can score it, she can handle it, she can rebound. I think her game will evolve in a lot of different ways. In that next spot, I really struggled. I had Unyoda again, but I really struggled between their backcourt, to be honest. I certainly understand what Summer Sigmund means to the team, as you said, but I was looking more, and I think I'm going to give the nod to Emily Coleman. I just think what she does for the team on both ends, her versatility, she brings a lot to the table, and on a team that is so deep and so balanced, she's able to really share the ball, handle the ball. She guards multiple positions. She brings a toughness to this team that as they get older, I think they'll all start to bring. But I think we all can agree that the difference between the first and second round against Southeastern this year was just the toughness that Unyoda played with in the second game compared to that first game. And I think Emily's the type of kid that brings a lot of that to the table. So I would give Emily Coleman. And then we agree on Reuter and Robinson. I think Reuter, for all the things you mentioned, you know, you're going to have to look beyond the stat sheet with her a lot of times and just appreciate her intangibles and appreciate the way she runs things. Again, you heard me talk about Coach Carino at the beginning and the way I thought Piketon overachieved. I thought Reuter was right in the middle of all that. And then Robinson, a kid again in the second half of the season. I watched her a couple times in the second half of the season, Derek. One night I had a chance to watch her over at Paint Valley. She just took the game completely over in the third quarter. Mm-hmm. Scored, I think it was 17 in the quarter, hit 4 threes. And really started to take them to another level. So I think we're setting up for some really interesting discussions later on. Right now, that second team wasn't that far off. We certainly disagreed a little bit with Southeastern and Unyoda. But I think it's even setting up for some even more disagreements on down the line that maybe we can discuss when we're all said and done here.
Well, since Shane, you do it so well, I think we're going to go back to you for the third team in your honorable mention, kids, because you put them in order, whereas Derek has failed us.
Well, on the third team, I go right back to Southeastern, and I start again with Schuyler Heights for a lot of those same reasons. I just think it would be awfully hard to finish a list of 15 and not get a third kid. Now, Derek mentioned Minton earlier. Certainly can't argue that. I mean, obviously, all the Southeastern starters are a big part of 40 in a row and going 13-1 this year. Also, just to stretch down into my honorable mention, that's all I have now for Southeastern. So that does move Minton and Morse. I certainly considered them. So I tried to do my honorable mention just on who I actually consider. So Minton and Morris will drop down to my honorable mention, and I'll put Schuyler Heights there in my 11th spot. Then I come back to Uniota again, and man, did I really, really struggle here. I kind of knew I'd given Atkins the first thought there, and I moved her down to honorable mention. So it really came down to more of a Sigmund and an Amber Cottrell. And again, maybe I'm just a little guard bias. There's two times I left games this year thinking that Amber Cottrell might be the best player Uniota has. So I'm going to go Amber Cottrell, and that's nothing against Sigmund, what she's done for that team. You've heard me on this show this winter, guys, call her the X Factor on two different occasions. Obviously, the other night, that moment was really, really special. That's I've been in that gym for a long time now, and that's about as loud as I've ever heard it. That place was shaking, the moment she provided there. But I just think in the overall body of work, I'll go Cottrell here on that third team. And then we get down to the final three spots, and Huntington and Paint Valley really make this difficult. So let me kind of just think out loud here for you a little bit to give some mention to the other kids, Bruce, that certainly were on my radar.
Okay.
I don't feel like Zane Trace and Adina will be honored this year. I certainly think like Lauren Lane and Hannah Stark and some of those kids for their respective teams are doing a nice job. I just didn't think any of them quite made the top 15. I certainly respect what those two programs are trying to do. You could even throw Odell Piketon in the mix there a little bit. I at least thought of that a little bit. But once I got down to Paint Valley and Huntington, there was simply no room. I would even throw Marcy Dudgeon. I thought she was the kid, for whatever reason, got off to a really slow start this year, Derek. Mm-hmm. I thought she was a kid at the end of last year that if I had to predict, if she were going to be on the list this year or not, I would have predicted yes. I get down to the bottom here and don't quite have the room. So really, really my pickle comes from getting all the way down here on the third team. And we had, Braden Collins up at the start, Lexi Woods up at the start, and now we're down to Huntington and Paint Valley.
Yep.
And I think what was difficult for me was the balance of these teams, one. Okay, because you have Cheyenne Conley, you have Riley Black, you have Kelsey McDonald. On the other side, you have a Leah McFadden, you have a Kelsey Dunn. And I think what happens is, I mentioned in my overview, Bruce, that Paint Valley, in my mind, was kind of more of a 10-4, 9-5 basketball team.
Mm-hmm.
When in reality, that just didn't happen. You know what I mean? With the injury, I mean, obviously there's reasons why it didn't happen, but there's reality. You look at statistically what happens here, you have Kelsey Dunn, who's seventh in the league in scoring. She's fourth in the league in rebounding. She leads the league in blocks. You have Aaliyah McFadden. She averages 10 points a game. She's a top 10 scorer. She is basically right up at top with Lexi Woods in assist and Amber Cottrell in assist to lead the league. So it's very difficult to keep those two off. But I think what happens is you probably, in fairness to the Huntington squad, with where they finish, you probably do have to come back and give them a little bit of lead. So here's the way I'm going to do these final three spots, guys. I'm going to first go Cheyenne Conley of Huntington. And this was a really difficult situation for me. But you mentioned the senior situation earlier, Derek. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe that's where I find myself. This is me being maybe a little bit biased, too. Again, I coached some of these girls when they were younger. Cheyenne Conley, as a freshman, was almost in the way in practice. Like, she just wasn't very good. You know, I mean, she was a kid that worked really hard. She did. She was a kid that worked really hard. She'd stay after practice. She'd work. And then she'd get a little bit better by the end of that year. Then her sophomore year, she ended up being a starter on a 14-0 JV team. Got a little bit better. Her junior year, albeit she wasn't starting varsity, and by the second half of the year, making winning plays. And now when I watch her play, you know, I just, she represents, we talked about the JV situation earlier and how important it was to programs. She represents everything that's right in program building. And you watch her play. You mentioned how hard Huntington plays. She's right in the middle of all that. I mean, that kid would run through a brick wall to beat you. And that's why it's really hard for me to decipher there. Now, my original list had Leah McFadden and Kelsey Dunn. And then when I went back to the standings, I started to think, okay, is my Paint Valley bias in the way? Is some of my Huntington bias in the way? Well, what do I need to look at here? If, in fairness, if you look at the standings, I just don't know how you can put three Paint Valley kids on the team when you consider where they started. So I probably would go to my guard bias and keep the Leah McFadden. And then I would probably give the Riley Black the last spot there. Again, Kelsey McDonald, a lot like Marcy Dudgeon. Kelsey's probably the second best quote-unquote basketball player on the Huntington team. She's had some injuries. She's missed some games. She got off to the slow start as a result of a lot of that. You know, I think Riley Black does a lot for that team. You mentioned like the way they played at Uniota the other night. Her foul trouble was really, really a factor in that game. When she was no longer in the paint, you know, competing on the glass for them and bumping cutters and doing a lot of things, she steps out and shoots the three a little bit. So, you know, I'm going to go Conley, McFadden, and Black to finish my team. But what's going to happen in a big time snub there is going to be Kelsey Dunn. When you consider where she's at statistically and how much she's improved over the last year. But I guess for me, Derek, even though I try not to live on the standings too much when I do this, it's just really difficult for me, even with my Paint Valley bias, and maybe I'm going the other way. Maybe I'm cheating the Paint Valley kid because of my Paint Valley bias. But again, at 5-9, falling all the way to sixth place there, it's really hard for me to justify putting her there. So I think Kelsey Dunn and Kelsey McDonald are two really, really good players on the honorable mention list. But obviously, we said that in the overview, you're gonna see three or four names on the honorable mention list that could be third team. I think you could even argue that I have a Summer Sigmund and a Mitten down on my honorable mention that Derek had all the way up on a second team.
Yeah.
So that's what I was referring to earlier. There was going to be some great conversation. So, Derek, I want to give you a chance to honor the kids. I have two follow-up questions for you that I really was fighting that I want to ask you about for good discussion points as well here in just a second.
Well, for my third team, I mean, because I didn't have Emily Coleman on the second team, I put her on the third team. I kind of led it out with that. You had Rachel Collins, I believe, on the second team. I had her on the third team. I have Amber Cottrell. I have Leah McFadden. I have Cheyenne Conley. So those three, I believe you had those on your third team, correct?
Cheyenne, Leah,
Conley. And yes. So we agreed there. But the only differences between you and I's, were, Rachel Collins and Emily Coleman. You mentioned I had Summer on second team. You had Skylar Heiss on third team. I had her on an honorable mention list and I kind of gave the nod to Rachel Collins. Riley Black. I was debating between her or Cheyenne, but because some of the same reason. I mean, here's the thing, Shane. If I'm starting a street fight and I got SEC players, yeah, Cheyenne Conley's on my team, right? I'm just letting you know. I mean, I
can't disagree with that.
She's my first pick. Let's put it that way. She's just so scrappy. She's tough. I love the way she plays the game, and I think that's kind of why she got the nod over Riley Black there. And Riley Black's tough herself. Let's not make a mistake. But Cheyenne Conley, I mean, I just feel like if she got in a boxing match, I mean, Cheyenne Conley's winning every match. You know, she's like, you know, the Conor McGregor of the SEC, if you will. And then on my honorable mention, as you said, I had Lauren Lane, Hannah Stark. I think those two will be all conference players next year when they continue to develop. But I think you're right. I don't think, you know, one of those two teams get honored this year with their records in conference play. You look at Nadina, and you mentioned earlier Richard Scott. I mean, that team in that program is getting better, but I mean, he's kind of in a rock and a hard place where he can develop the players he has, but he can't go out and get any other players because, or whatever may be the reason. Maybe that's an investigative feature I'll have to do. Yeah. But whatever the reason is, there is talent out there, and there are talented players, but they just don't play basketball. So, you know, he's doing the best that he can with the players he has. And I think that program with the players that are in the program is getting better. I mean, here's the thing. Erin Daly, I don't think, is a bad basketball coach. I think she knows what she's doing. I think she's a good basketball coach. But when you walk into the situation that Erin did and the situation that was left, I mean, what – let's put it this way. If you think you could do better than what she's doing, be my guest. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a tough, tough situation. She walked into a program that wasn't a program. It was a group of girls. It was an eight-member group of girls. That's it. That's all she had. Mm-hmm. So I think next year they're going to be better because of the experience they have this year. You know, she's got a bunch of freshmen that have a bunch of varsity experience now. And hopefully, you know, they do get more kids out into the basketball program as well. But I had Hannah Stark, Lauren Lane, Marcy Dudgeon, you mentioned, Brianna O'Dell, you mentioned. I had Skylar Heiss, Skylar Heiss, Riley Black, as I said, as well as Kelsey McDonald and Kelsey Dunn on the honorable mention list. So,
well, Bruce, real quick, if you don't mind me just following up there.
Go right ahead.
One of the questions, I was actually talking about my list of some people over the last week, and one of the questions that had come up, and by no means were they attacking kids or anything. They were just asking a question, like talking basketball. They were saying, is it a fair discussion point to say that if both Leah McFadden and Kelsey Dunn are all honorable mention, should they have not won a couple more games when Lexi was out? And Derek, I guess my take on that was, even though I understood that question comes with the territory, I thought it was a really unfair question, because I guess what I would say is, if Huntington played, you know, basically more than a league round without Braden Collins, how many do they win? If Southeastern plays more than a league round without Ella Skeens, how many do they win? You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, obviously Uniota's mm-hmm. probably the most equipped to take on. I mean, do you kind of agree with my standpoint there? I guess at the end of the day, I still had to be fair based on where Paint Valley finished, because your record is what your record is. But don't you think that question's a little bit unfair to Leah and Kelsey if you were looking at it strictly from that standpoint of what their record was when Lexi was out?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would say if we're playing fair or unfair, I would definitely say that's unfair. And you know, here's what. First of all, she's the school's all-time leading scorer for a reason. You lose a scorer like that, and as a role player on the team, like a Leah or like a Kelsey, when you have Lexi to give the ball and then she's just not there anymore, I mean, you kind of look around like, well, what do I do? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you have that type of kind of reaction of like, oh, I'm supposed to score, I'm supposed to shoot. I mean, you're not ready for that. Mm-hmm. They were thrown into that fire without, you know, asking for it. They didn't, you know, anticipate that. There's no way to anticipate that. But I think you look at Paint Valley's schedule as well. I mean, it's not like they play a bad schedule. I mean, when Lexi Woods goes out, and even in their non-conference schedule is what I'm talking about. And, you know, obviously we know the Southeastern, the Huntingtons, the Pikings, you know, but when you look at the non-conference schedule, it's not bad either. So to say that, you know, well, Leah McFadden and Kelsey Dunn, you know, they should have picked up that slack. You know, how do you pick up the entire slack of the all-time leading scorer in school history? I mean, it's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen if you ask two kids that aren't score-first players to, you know, be score-first players right now. I mean, that's just – it's not going to come together like that. I mean, if maybe over a year's time, maybe over a couple years' time, but not in a time frame of a couple weeks.
Well, and then my second follow-up real quick that I really – well, I thought was crazy. Like, you know, when I'm doing this type of list, Bruce, I automatically look ahead a little bit to next year and think about who's coming back, who's what hole to fill and so forth. If I would rewind and go back a year ago today to doing this, I said it kind of as I was going through my list, Kelsey McDonald and Marcy Dudgeon not being on this list really blows my mind. Now, obviously, coming into next year, we know what Uniota returns, and that's, you know, the story. Okay. But individually, can you think of two other young ladies, Derek, of Kelsey or Marcy, for their respective teams? You know, Westfall and Huntington just played in the 8th grade championship, so they both have some help coming. Obviously, Huntington returns a great deal. To me, those are two kids outside of Uniota. Those are two kids that are coming back. Obviously, Paint Valley is going to return four starters as well, or four kids that have started during Lexi being out, but those are two kids that really jump out at me. You know, what's your take on maybe the slow start that McDonald and Dudgeon got off to, and but then the way they ended much stronger.
So are you meaning two players like them?
Yeah, well, I'm just asking, you know, what was your take on their slow start, and do you think that those two are really kind of the X factors moving forward for their programs? I mentioned the depth of the Paint Valley and Unioto, what they have coming back, but to me, McDonald and Dudgeon seem to be individuals that, not to put too much of a bullseye on any one kid, but those kids seem really, really important to how successful Huntington and how successful Westfall can be next year.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I mentioned it you mentioned it when you talked about Marcy Dudgeon. I mean, Westfall was, again, 4-3 in the second half of the season. A lot of that, I mean, yes, it had to do with Emily Robinson's play. She was a score first player, but Marcy Dudgeon does it all. I mean, I think I watched her the first game of the year at Huntington. I guess I watched Kelsey as well. But I just thought to myself, I'm like, man, Marcy, like, she had a bad night, you know? And then I started getting, you know, more, I guess, results from Westfall from Coach Blewett. I'm like, man, Marcy scored 2 points. She scored three. What's going on with Marcy Dudgeon? You know, over the second half of the season, I'm like, that's the Marcy Dudgeon that I thought would, you know, show up all year long. And Westfall started to win a couple games. And I really think we talked about this last week. I don't like their tournament draw, but I think it's a winnable game if Marcy Dudgeon plays well. And that's what an X factor is to me. I mean, it depends on how a kid plays. Like, if Kelsey McDonald plays well, and Huntington's already shown they can, you know, compete at a Southeastern level, at a Unioto level, they can compete at a North Adams level, but Kelsey McDonald has to play well. That's what an X factor is to me. And I think you labeled those two, kids correctly. They're absolutely X factors. And if they continue to play well, if they play to their potential throughout the rest of this year, throughout the rest of next year, and, you know, obviously Marcy being a sophomore, that her next year to end her career, that we could be talking about these guys as player of the year candidates, as first team SEC candidates. I mean, that's the talent that they have. So if they go out there and show that on a nightly basis, I mean, yes, their team's absolutely a lot better. I think they're in a winnable game. They can compete with anybody.
Well, it's just a lot of fun, Bruce. I know we always go over on shows like tonight, and we'll get through our last two segments here. But, I just think it's really worth it taking the time to talk about these kids. I know they go through some injuries. They go through some different times they missed early in the year, and that slows them down too. But, man, it's a lot of fun to break it down and talk about them.
And I'm sure there's some people that agree with you and disagree with you, and we'll let you know here just shortly how you can contact these guys and give them your thoughts as well. We'd like to hear them on the girls all SVC teams and the selections and so forth. Argue with the orders, whatever you want to do. Let's move now to our fast break, Shane.
Yeah, the Crown Hill Golf Club, let's give them another mention. Always the sponsor of our fast break, 740-986-4653. Again, 740-986-4653. Give them a call. Tell them SVC Sports Talk sent you. Obviously, we're going to turn and look at some of the boys' brackets this week, Bruce, along with a couple other things. So it should be a lot of fun. Let's go ahead with the Crown Hill Golf Club fast break.
Before looking at the brackets, give the fan a boys' team that you feel is peaking at the right time.
Shane, I've said this all year long, and you know I'm going to stick with my gut here. I have to go with Adina. I think they have an inside shot to be, you know, one of these Cinderella teams we always talk about. Zach Fout, JD Blevins, they can score. Then you look at their younger kids now with a lot of experience, with a 20-plus game experience now. Jarrett Garrison is a star in the making. When he's a senior, that kid, maybe even as a junior, we may be talking about him as an SEC Player of the Year candidate. Consistently now on a nightly basis, it seems like over the last 3 or 4 weeks, you know, he's scoring in double figures, and he's got 8, 9, 10 assists. I mean, there's been a couple times where he's had 11 assists. So with those three kids and what they've got around them, with the Logan Bennett, with the Caleb Fogelsong, Ethan Cunningham, Jacob Shipley, I know I'm missing a couple. I really think that squad with Kyle Bradley as a coach, and the way that he coaches that team to kind of go at a fast pace, pressure teams, I really think they're peaking at the right time. And I really think that we can maybe be looking at like a Southeastern situation from last year, only Southeastern, you know, kind of sub that for Adina.
Well, certainly can't argue with that selection. I'm going to go with Paint Valley, Bruce. Winners, I believe now it's 8 of their last 9 really, really playing well. Obviously, with a kid like Dylan Swingle in the middle, a kid that should most likely become the all-time SVC scorer probably in the next couple of games here in the regular season. Obviously, he's dynamic. The way Newland is shooting it from three. I know they're really pleased with Hunter Hamlin's input as well now. And then their backcourt of McFadden and Grubb obviously can do a lot of the little things to put it all together. And they're really hot. They kind of did this last year, made the combo run. And I see no reason as they're starting to peak right at the right time that they can't do it again.
In looking at the postseason brackets, what do you like about them in terms of our SVC teams?
Well, for starters, you know, nobody plays each other. You know, I mean, I like that where we had last year, at least in the opening round. In the last year, I mean, you know, I think it was Huntington and the Paint Valley played early, Adena and Westfall played early. I mean, it was just like, okay, you know, they're kind of beating each other up in a tournament run where they have to end each other's seasons. They're not going to have to do that this year, you know, until maybe down on the line if it gets to that far. So I love that. I love that we can cover them against other teams. And, you know, Shane, as maybe my members of the media, I'm not really supposed to say this, but I can kind of root silently for, you know, our area teams where, you know, if they played each other, I kind of got to stay unbiased. So I love that. If we're talking about individual teams' draws, I really like Piketon's. Obviously, a number one seed there with North Adams and a West. I think to beat a Wheelersburg, I think Piketon can beat a Wheelersburg team in a district final if, say, the top seeds continue to win. I like Uniota's seeding to get to a district final. You know, they would have to go through a Miami Tracer McLean, obviously, then a Warren, which I think they can do. And I think they can beat that top seeded Sheridan team with their, I mean, that starting five there. You know, Uniota can beat anybody in that district, including a Fairland, by the way, if they would meet way down the line. I'm not saying they would beat Fairland. I'm saying they would be in the game and they can compete in that game. So if you're looking at tournament draws individually, I'm going with Piketon and Uniota's. If you're looking at tournament draws as a whole, I'm just glad they're not playing each other.
Well, yeah, my overview is pretty positive. I just like the fact that a lot of teams have opportunities where they can compete. So many times you get, you know, obviously Huntington gets a really athletic Portsmouth team there, but, overall, I just like the ability for the SBC to be competitive. But we're kind of on the same page here, Derek, because in my main answer was going to be district title hopes. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to win some sectionals, which I think over half the league has a legitimate shot to do so. But I think that the district title hopes of Uniota and Piketon are really, really pretty legit. In fact, I would call Piketon a pretty heavy favorite in their particular mm-hmm. bracket.
On the other hand, what do you not like about the brackets in terms of our SVC teams?
Well, I mean, look, there's a lot of positives, as Shane just mentioned, but there's one glaring negative, and that's definitely Zane Treese's tournament draw. They get 7'1" Zach Loveday and Gallia Academy in their opening tournament game in a sectional final there at Southeastern. I just don't. I mean, I know they've played Dylan Swingle twice this year and beaten Paint Valley twice this year. But Gallia, they're a different animal than a Paint Valley. You know, they've got, first of all, Loveday obviously is very good. But I mean, when you look at the teams that Gallia has beaten, when you look at the teams that they played with, I mean, they went down to the wire with a Fairland. You know, they play a really good schedule. You know, I just think it's a tough matchup for Zane Treese, especially in the way that they like to play. They like to play a lot of half-court sets. And while Isaac Beam and Triton Davidson are absolutely, you know, great basketball players, you know, in our conference, I don't know if they've seen a Loveday up close. I know, like I said, I know they played Swingle, but when you play a Dylan Swingle, you can put two or three on him and kind of let the others go to work, and maybe they have an off night. Guy doesn't have off nights. That's the difference between the teams. So I don't know. I don't like Zane Treese's draw. If they can get past the Gallia Academy, guess who they got? Fairfield Union and Colin Woodside and a 6 foot, you know, 9'10" kid that's going to UC for football. So, Zane Treese's path to a district final. Oh, and by the way, if they get there, they got to play Fairland. It's awful.
Well, I think for me, Bruce, one of the biggest things I just hate about the whole process is how we seed so early. You know, to me, I would use Painted Valley maybe as an example. They're 11-7 on the bracket. They're actually 13-7 now, I believe. And barring an upset, they're going to be 15-7. So they're being seeded as an 11-7 team. I'm just using them as an example. This is the case for a lot of people throughout this whole process. And to me, it's absolutely ignorant that we still are seeding with in some cases, 2-3 games to go. You already know you're going to be at Waverly. You already know you're going to be at Logan or Southeastern or wherever you're going to play at. There's no excuse not to play this thing out to next Saturday night and then seed based on the records or based on a vote at that point. That's always bothered me that, you know, teams can stick things after the draw or do different things after the draw. You know, in today's technology and the way we vote, I mean, coaches don't even drive down to vote these things anymore. There's no excuse that we can't have. I'm even in favor of some sort of computer system that does it for us and takes the stuff out. But we have way too many people posting a record that's not actually what their record should be when it comes to the end of the year. Sometimes it hurts them, sometimes it helps them, but I would be in much more favor of them stretching this thing out to the 22-game record. And I think in some cases, as the example I just given, you could be talking almost 3-seat difference, which obviously changes the whole dynamic of the tournament.
Much has been made about how the officials will allow teams to play in the tournament. Do you feel there is a team that benefits from this? How about a team that this can hurt?
Well, I mean, look, they let them play physical in the tournament. I mean, it's kind of that old saying of, well, let the teams play. Here's my problem with that. I don't have a problem with that style of basketball, but if you're going to have it in the tournament, do it all season long. That's my biggest maybe gripe about referees in Southern Ohio, because that's what you're going to see. You're going to see them let the players play. Well, let them play all year long. Because if they don't play all year long, they're going to come in there, act, you know, thinking another game, right? No, then you're going to get beat up all game long. And it's just like, well, we haven't had to do this. However, I like the question here because it does benefit some teams. You know, I think that obviously when you have 6'11" Dylan Swingle, you know, I mean, you can kind of bang around a little bit down low. I think it benefits a team like a Zane Trace. Even though, like I said, I don't like their tournament draw. They play hard nosed, kind of up in your face defense. I think it benefits a Unyoto, where you get a Gabe Fisher who gets, let's be honest, in a lot of foul trouble. You know, he can play a little bit harder. He can go kind of at that level that he likes to play at. Maybe not get into some foul trouble. On the other side of that, you know, I think it hurts. Teams like a Piketon, who rely on a lot of guard play, you know, maybe even a Southeastern, who don't have a lot of size. I mean, they have the Wheeler down low, but I mean, not a lot of bulk, if you would. But I mean, Shane, for me, when you talk about officials, if you're going to call a certain way in postseason, call that certain way all season long.
Well, for me, first of all, I'd be a terrible official because I would call way too many fouls. I'd be the guy that Derek Webb's tweeting about, like, let him play, you know what I mean? Like, which really means let him fight. you know, let them play requires, like, calling fouls so we can have, like, skill in the game. But, you know, anyway, I'll get back to the question. I think the Unyoto boys, Southeastern girls are the teams that would benefit from this because, again, this comes from experience. You know, like, you watch those kids play the other night in that game, Derek. They weren't even fazed by the contact. They're just used to it. They bounce off of it. I think Skylar Heiss even kind of enjoyed it.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those where maybe pressing teams, though, in some ways, like Adina Piketon sometimes could help them a little bit. Maybe you're able to get some handsy, get a little bit more handsy and so forth, not be called. Maybe it favors the Paint Valley or other teams that do not have a lot of depth. You know, the last thing you want is a bunch of fouls being called if you're not that deep. So, you know, lack of experience, those are the teams that get hurt the most. Maybe some guards like the Huntington boys or guards that do a lot off the dribble because usually they're going to let you put your hands or a little bit more body on you on the drive and so forth. So those are some of the things I would watch. The experienced teams are usually the ones that are far more familiar on how to handle it.
And there you have our fast break brought to you by Crown Hill Golf Club. Give them a call, 740-986-4653. They'll work out what you need from down here in SVC territory. And tell them that Shane and the boys sent you from SVC Sports Talk. You know, guys, we kind of gave a lot about the brackets there for the guys. We talked about who we liked, who we don't like, and so forth. Any particular feelings about the brackets for the girls?
Well, I think, you know, we mentioned a couple things last week. You know, as I look ahead, I'm really intrigued by that Paint Valley New Boston game. I also Uniota Washington Courthouse is a game, maybe a Southeastern Eastern Brown. That could be a night where Skeen sets the record. That'd be kind of cool. Those are some of the ones that jump out at me, Derek. I know we touched on it briefly last week, but those are the games looking ahead that I probably would be interested the most in this upcoming week.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that. You know, I actually like the. I would want to. I agree with all the games that you just mentioned. I kind of got it circled on my calendar, that Huntington North Adams game too. I'd like to see how.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You know, they kind of with the Braden Collins defensively, and you know the way that Huntington's been playing over the last couple of weeks. I'm kind of excited to see that and just how good they can be against you know one of the you know kind of region's tough teams.
All right, guys, earlier I said I'd give the contact information so that people could write in and agree or disagree with you about your picks and so forth for the girls' teams. Right now, if you want to contact these guys, first for Derek, you can do so at his email address, which is drweb, thus the Dr. Webb that we talk about all the time. That's drweb@chillicothegazette.com. You can also direct message him on Twitter at the verified account of @DW1509. I always got to get the verified in there. For Shane, there's two profiles on Facebook. You can also email him at admin1@svcsportzone.com. And you can hit him up on Twitter, as they say, at @svcsportzone.com. And while you're at it, we request that you please consider subscribing to our podcast. You can do so through iTunes, or you can also do so through Stitcher. We're going to move to our post-game comments now, brought to you by C&K Athletic Equipment. And as I mentioned, on Facebook, they've announced their moving sale. They're going to have this sale on Saturday, February the 17th. That will be next Saturday from 10 to 4. They're marking all their clothing inventory down 50% to 70%. So if you need something, they are going to have it on sale. Basically, that excludes all equipment, and they are your source for SVC school apparel. They're also doing custom screen printing. I saw some hats that they're now embroidering on, and they've also got a complete line of corporate wear, a more full service sporting goods store. We'll have more on their move a little bit south later on when we get that information as well. Well, guys, in our post-game comments, we're going to look or ask your opinions basically on the outlook here for the Zane Trace and Uniota game. What's your outlook and what are the keys to that game? Go to Shane first.
Well, I tell you, the biggest thing for me is the fact that some people are going to say that it's not – as big a deal because the league could be decided. Mm-hmm. To me, I think that's crazy. I think that it's still going to have incredible intensity. You know, the Big Four there with Uniota and what they still want to play for in terms of the historic value. Zane Trace is been kind of hard to figure out, but they're certainly a team capable. And you know, if they're able to come in there and get off to a good start and get into the second half, it's huge. I think the 3-point shot is going to be really, really important. Can Zane Trace take the 3-point shot away from Uniota, make them score two at a time, keep them off the free throw line? And then even though Zane Trace is usually a little bit more efficient with the 2-point shot, I think in order to pull this off, it's going to require them to knock down the deep shot a little bit. They're going to have to get some perimeter shooting from somewhere in order to loosen things up in there for Beam and Davidson and company. So I think it's going to be a great, great game. It's kind of the last regular season hurrah for this Big Four from Uniota and what they've accomplished there. Mm-hmm. And it's even though the league may not be on the line, there's certainly plenty on the line when it comes to these two schools playing. It should be real exciting.
Anything for you, Derek, you're looking for?
Well, you know, obviously, again, I think I said way back when, you know, whenever I'd watch Uniota and Zane Trace do whatever, I'd watch Matt Hoops and Gary Kello go at it and, you know, whatever, chess checkers, mm-hmm. if they want to have a cage fight at the Triple Crown, one of the inflatables. I mean, that's fine. But I'd pay to see it. But I don't know. I mean, for me, here's the thing, Shane. What I'm interested to see is how Zane Trace bounces back after a loss at Piketon. Obviously, you go down to Piketon. Piketon's not a bad team. That they got a one seed for a reason. But a lot of people probably thought Zane Trace should have won that game. I mean, now there's two very good basketball teams going at it. And as Evan Lake said after that game, this is what high school basketball is all about. And it is. However, I just really thought that especially in the second half, Zane Trace came out really flat. And I mean, Piketon just kind of relied on Tanner and Purdue and even Alex Blanton, who hit a couple of huge shots in the second half. That kid's a player. Mm-hmm. But I'm just interested to see if, you know, because Zane Trace doesn't have anything to really play for now, how are they going to come out? Obviously, they play Unyoda. You always have something to play for when you play Unyoda, and I'm sure they'd want to, you know, kind of play that spoiler role of a gold ball season. I get that. But, I mean, Unyoda, I think the pressure lies with them because they can win a gold ball, and they can continue this streak and you know, kind of take it if they beat Southeastern to a 69 game win streak. But and I don't know, Shane. Honestly, I mean, if I'm picking a winner here, I really think it's Unyoda by 8+. Just by seeing the teams as of late, and I, you know, hey, I was on record earlier saying I thought Zane Trace would beat Unyoda this season. I've kind of flipped my position.
Hmm. All right. Well, Derek, we're going to go to you with this last question here. We kind of touched upon them, but it will give us a little bit more time to develop this. What girls' postseason matchup, team, or storyline are you eager to watch?
I mean, if I got to pick one, you know, we talked about, you know, who's peaking at the right time on the boys' side. I'll kind of go that route, and maybe Shane can take a different route, but if I'm taking that route, I'm going with Unyoda. I mean, you know, playing really well right now. Obviously, they get a Logan Elm matchup, who they've already beaten this year. I know Jeff Miller would maybe smack me if I said that that they're going to beat Logan Elm, but they should. Let's put it that way. And then I think that Washington is definitely beatable, you know, for them. We look at a Southeastern Washington matchup where, you know, Southeastern was in the game. We look at even a Huntington Washington Courthouse matchup where Huntington was in the game for about three quarters. Mm-hmm. I think Unyoda can beat a Washington. And then say they get to a district semi, they got your Vinton County Vikings, Bruce, who they've already beaten this season. Mm-hmm. You know, call it maybe a bad night from Vinton County, which probably was, and I think that's fair to say. However, I mean, a win's a win. And I think Unyoda's defense definitely played a role in that bad night, if you would, for Vinton County. So, I mean, I really think Unyoda can get to a district final if they play like they know they can play, if they play to their potential. And then they play a Miami Trace team with, I mean, Shane, they lost the Fleeman girl, I'm hearing. I think this is earlier in the season. I don't think she's back just yet, so I don't think – she might not be back. I've heard that she tore ACL, so that's a huge loss, obviously, for Miami Trace. And now, they've still won games down the stretch. They, you know, still beat, like yesterday, they beat a Washington Courthouse by, you know, 10 or 11 or whatever it was. But I think that game's winnable if Unyoda plays how they can play. That's a tough win to you know, to kind of pull off over a Tanner Bryant who's going to Florida Gulf Coast from Miami Trace. But I just really like where they're at as a team right now and their tournament draw.
Shane, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, for me, a storyline, obviously, the Skeens record. That's a really, really big deal. Probably here in the sectional finals, going to pass a Southeastern school record, and then have a chance to pass the SVC record there in the district level. I think it's interesting with Paint Valley and Unyoda how they have really, really tough sectional final games. But they have winnable districts. Obviously, Vinton County's phenomenal, but the fact that they have beaten Vinton County would obviously give them a lot of confidence there. Same way with Paint Valley. They're going to have to play their very best game to beat a really good New Boston team, Glenwood New Boston. But if they do, Paint Valley probably enters the district semifinal as a big-time favorite. So they're going to get a chance to maybe play in a district final. So those are some of the things that jump out at me. You mentioned the Huntington-North Adams game earlier. That's a really big one as well. So best of luck to all of our teams. I appreciate you guys staying on with me late this week. Obviously, anytime we name – yeah, go ahead.
Hey, Shane, I got a question for you. I don't mean to – I know we're running a little bit late, but I don't know if you've seen this or not, and a lot of the fans might not have either. The OHSAA, this I believe either this year or even just maybe for the tournament, they put in a new rule where there's no rolling of the shorts. So players can't roll their shorts up.
Yeah.
And I just saw a tweet where it said that it'll be strictly enforced in the tournament. Players will be asked to check out of the game if they don't abide by it. I mean, 1 to 10. How ridiculous is this?
Well, first of all, when you list like the 10 things we need to change in the game, the rolling of the shorts certainly has to be at least in the top two.
Yes.
I mean, unbelievable.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just to me. Who thinks of this stuff?
I wish it was that easy for us to go to a quarter bonus so that we could start calling fouls.
Right? Maybe a shot clock, but, you know.
Yeah. I don't know.
Let's do the rolling of the shorts.
I don't even have a comment on the fashion police and what they're up to. Unbelievable.
We'll have to see if there's, I guess you guys watch enough tournament ball to know if there's anyone call.
Yeah, we sit here and joke about it until like a really good player has to go out of the game or whatever.
Right.
And their team outscored 8-2 because they didn't wear their shorts properly.
We need to do a whole show on stupid rules.
Yeah, we could fix the whole game in an hour, couldn't we?
Well,
we'll tape that one after this one. How's that sound?
That's a good idea. Good.
Thank you, guys, for bringing that up. I certainly do appreciate you staying on with me long this week. To our fans that are familiar with SVC Sports Talk, anytime we name our teams, we're always very passionate about it, and the discussion usually does go a little over. So you can expect next week's to possibly do that a little bit as well. But you know, we hope you're familiar enough with the show. You can fast forward, rewind, do whatever you got to do to get to those things. But I certainly don't want to cheat those kids, you know, when it comes time to do that. So. Again, next week, we will name our boys' team. Look forward to getting feedback this week. Good luck to all the SVC girls in the tournament, as well as the boys in their final regular season week as they prepare for the tournament. So guys, until that next time here on Triple Crown Family Fun Center, for all of our sponsors, for Bruce Knox and all the people behind the scenes at DBK Media Services, and for Derek Webb, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.